Hey, welcome to another episode of the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford, and today's episode is about someone who switched from being a stay-at-home mom to a front-end developer. But first, a quick word about this episode's wonderful sponsor. Linode is a cloud hosting provider built both by and for developers. They make it super easy and affordable to host your app, website, or service on the cloud. Linode is independently owned and founded on a love for Linux, open source technologies, and the community that surrounds them. If it runs on Linux, it runs on Linode. Even better, as a Learn to Code with Me listener, you can get $100 in free credit when you create a new account with Linode. To claim your $100, just go to linode.com/learn-to-code. That's all one word. Happy coding. And we're back. In today's episode, I talk with Phoebe Vong Fidel. Phoebe is a front-end developer from the UK who builds interactive maps for a living. After working in higher education for over a decade, she quit her job after having her second child to be a stay-at-home mom. And that's where she taught herself how to code. 2 years later, she accepted her first job as a JavaScript front-end developer at the age of 36. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. How Phoebe switched to tech from a completely different industry, how she taught herself to code while raising two young kids as a stay-at-home mom, and advice she has for other people who want to break into tech from non-technical backgrounds. Our conversation also touches on the resources that she used to learn how to code, the importance of transferable skills, and how to stay motivated in your coding journey. If you want to learn how to balance a busy life with learning to code, this episode is for you. Enjoy. Hey, Phoebe, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you. What part of the world are you in?
I am in the UK. I'm in England in a small town called Crowthorne.
Nice. So we're definitely on a time difference then, right? I think you're 6 hours ahead.
Yeah, I think maybe five if you're on the East Coast. So I think it's about five or six. Yeah, it depends on the time saving, the hour adjustment. So I think it's 5 or 6 hours.
Yes, because we have the daylight savings time and all that here still. Anyway, I would love to get into your journey and your career and all of that. And as we know, you taught yourself how to code and you currently work in front-end development. But I'm wondering, what motivated you to start teaching yourself how to code early on?
It's quite a long journey in terms of the seeds were buried quite early on in my career. So I'll go back to, I suppose, back to my university days. So I studied humanities, so I studied history. And it was, you know, it's in a field that's completely unrelated to web development. I kind of fell into a career in higher education. So I worked at several universities in London and I just sort of progressed up the administrative ladder and sort of did a range of roles. It was a good career, but I found that I was unfulfilled by it. So I started gravitating towards more technical projects. And then I thought, okay, I'll see how I can pursue a career down that road. But I always thought that I had to get a computer science degree. And I spoke to a technical team within my department. So they're the educational technologists. And they told me that I could pursue a technical career, but take HTML and CSS to start off with so I can become a web developer. So that's kind of like how it happened, really. I kind of didn't know what I wanted to do, but knew that the career I was in was wrong. So that was kind of my first steps towards becoming a web developer. And that was probably about 6 years prior to when I actually first started learning. And then I did a HTML course. It was a 3-day course. And that's where I actually met my husband. He was the instructor. And then from there, it just kind of, the idea was always in the back of my mind, but I kind of was a bit scared to let go of the career that I had. So it was kind of like I kind of put it on the back burner, did a few courses in Codecademy and then stopped. And then I think it was after I had my children, I started to really rethink about what I wanted to do. So after my second baby, I decided to give up the work that I was in and just take the leap and start learning web development. So that's how I kind of got into it.
I didn't realize you actually studied history, because that's what I studied too back in college, but I never worked in higher ed or academia or anything. But I do recall after studying history and kind of really thinking of the career paths that like people I was with in that program were going to be on. And it was all kind of like, yeah, it feels like it has to sort of be academia or something like that, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's kind of like you either go on to do a PhD and become a researcher, or you become a professor yourself. Or I just kind of like fell into a career, and it's quite funny. You get a lot of people from the same kind of background, English degrees, history degrees. So yeah, it's just the environment's really nice to work in. And I think it would be completely fine. I think I could have probably gone the rest of my life working within that sector, but there was always this kind of growing voice in the back of my mind thinking, you know, this is not what you want to do ultimately. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. And I just thought, if I don't do this, I'll regret it.
Yeah. So I'm curious because it sounds like you took a bit of a break from working when you had your children, right?
That's right. Yeah. I went back to work in between the first and second. I was in work for about 6 months because they're quite close together, the children. There's a difference of 19 months between the two. And then I took, because in the UK, we have quite long maternity leave. So I had about a year off. And then I decided to not go back to the work that I was doing before. And it gave me time to think and reflect during that time.
Well, it's great that you guys have such long maternity leave and paternal leave, I'm sure, as well. In the United States, it really depends on the company, you know, more so than anything else, because I do think some can have much more generous policies than others, but that's a, you know, different topic of conversation. So you were at home during this time, you know, reflecting on your career path, what you wanted to do in the future, and then you decided you didn't want to go back to the previous role that you had. What was the next thing that you did? Because you said that I think you said 6 years I've written down from the time you kind of started thinking about it and dabbling in it until you really like fully committed.
Yeah. It was probably about that. I think in between it was kind of half-hearted attempts. So I would do, so like I said, I attended like that 3-day HTML course and implemented some of what I learned. So I think what was great was that my work was very supportive. So they would try and integrate whatever aspirations I had with my current work. So I would sort of, because we used a learning platform, you know, called Blackboard, and I could go into documents and actually transform the HTML myself. So I would do sort of things like that, but I always kind of held on to my career at the same time. And I think I had to just give up my career in order to fully pursue web development. And it kind of just started from that. And I just started doing more research into which platform I wanted to do. So I chose FreeCodeCamp because I liked the curriculum. It was self-paced. I could learn whenever I had time, and there wasn't like these deadlines where I had to meet these, otherwise I would fail the course. And then I just took it from there. It was just day by day. And I just thought, well, I'll start it and see what happens. So I started to like it and realized that this is something that I wanted to carry on pursuing.
And what year was this, or how many years ago was that from like today?
So that was 2017 was when I actually started to learn consistently, tried to learn consistently every day, but with children, it was really tough. But that's probably end of 2017, autumn, I think, was about the time I started.
Right. And for those listening who maybe aren't familiar yet with FreeCodeCamp, even though I'm going to assume most people probably are, if not all, could you just briefly describe what it is and what it's like?
At the time that I was using it, there were 6 certificates, and if you complete them all, you have the full stack kind of development certifications under your belt. But if you do the first 3, which is HTML, so like kind of responsive web development, and JavaScript, so and CSS, it covers those kind of 3 subjects in and front-end libraries in the first 3 certificates, you could pretty much go into front-end development from that point. The rest were about back-end languages and, you know, kind of Node.js. But it's just kind of like a self Paste platform where you go in, the code editors within the web page, so you don't have to set up your own environment, your own IDE, and you just kind of complete a series of exercises. But then at the end of each section, you have to complete projects, and they're quite challenging, and you're pretty much kind of left to yourself to try and solve this. There's a great support within FreeCodeCamp. They have lots of forums where you can go in and ask questions, and it's really safe and the people are lovely. So if you do get stuck, there's the support, but it's pretty much just online learning at going at your own pace.
And another thing that they do, which I think is really neat, and I believe they still do this to this day, is the projects for nonprofits, right?
Yeah, that's how I got into it. But yeah, so I think they used to have it's a situation where they grouped you with another nonprofit to do work for them. But at the time, I don't think that was happening anymore. But I remember when my husband was telling me about FreeCodeCamp, and he said they do this great deal so you can get experience after you complete your certifications. But I'm not actually 100% sure they do that anymore. I would have
totally
to look
into fine. Totally fine. There's one thing that I know is for sure, it's free, as the name implies, right?
Yeah. It's completely free. It's all based on donor giving their, you know, money and donating their money. So it's great because there is no kind of stakeholders involved or anything. So it's just other people giving back. So a lot of the people who give to FreeCodeCamp were FreeCodeCampers themselves. I've given back to them because I used them extensively for 2 years. So I thought, you know, it's only fair to give back to them when I got my job.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you actually started to talk about the next thing I wanted to ask you, which was how long you went through their material, their certifications for, and what that was like. Because again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you were a stay-at-home mom at the time to your two young children. And I'm wondering what your days were like. Like, how did you structure your learning in?
Yeah, it was tough with two kids, and there were two babies under two at the time when I started learning. Yeah, at the start, it was basically code whenever I could, whenever they were asleep, whenever they were napping. I could sort of get 15 minutes here and there. So, and then some days I couldn't code at all, so I would have to just abandon, and I just had to base it around my children's schedule. But it got easier as they got older, and once I kind of put them into childcare part-time, and then it allowed me to do full days of studying. But yeah, at the time I was going at snail pace, but at least I was moving forward, but I was going quite slowly at the start. But it was just kind of getting into that routine, and once I found my routine, it was fine.
And I apologize if you answered this already, but did you go through multiple of their certification programs, or did you just kind of do like one of them? Because I think each one is quite big, right? Like, it takes a long time just to get through one.
Yeah, I think each certificate is estimated to be 300 hours of coursework. So I did five of them, five out of the six. I still haven't completed the last one. But what I did with FreeCodeCamp, I used that as my main curriculum. And then I would branch off, because there were some things which either I had knowledge gaps. For example, like, I hadn't done maths since I was like 15, 16. Since school, and I would have to go off and go to Khan Academy and do an algebra course. So I would have to branch off and do my own research and then come back to the curriculum. So I would do that quite a lot, because there was just some things which I just didn't know enough of, and I would have to do extra reading or extra practice. But I did about five of the six certificates at the time. I do want to go back and complete it, but it's whenever I've got the time to do it.
Yeah, of course. So you were doing this for 2 years, and after 2 years, was that when you started to apply to new jobs that were in web development for the first time? Or, yeah, I guess I just want to get a sense of like what the timeline was, because that's probably one of the most common questions I get asked is, how long will it take me to get a full-time job in tech? And my answer is always, well, it kind of depends, right? Depends on what you want to do, depends on how much time you have a day to learn, depends on your starting point, as you just talked about knowledge gaps. So yeah, I would love to learn more about how long this took and when you started to apply for jobs for the first time.
Yeah, it did take quite long for me. I know that some people expect the answer to be like 6 months or 9 months, but for me, it took over 2 years because I was studying part-time and also because I was attempting to freelance. So about 6 months into learning, once I completed the first three certifications, I decided to try and get some work experience. So I started freelancing, you know, kind of just as a general front-end developer. I created my first website, which was, it was for my sister-in-law, but it was for her business. So she said she didn't have a website for her, she does nails and she didn't have a website for her business. So I said, okay, I'll do it and I'll do it for free. So there was no pressure on either side. So she was happy with that arrangement and she was technically my first client and I could use her in my portfolio. And then from then I decided to carry on learning, but also kind of seeking out opportunities whenever I could. So I decided to, I thought, okay, I'll just join Fiverr and Upwork. But unfortunately, that didn't work for me. I couldn't find any work. I found that I was competing against a lot of people globally, and it was just really tough. So then I decided to go locally and see if I can find clients within the city that I was in at the time. And I started freelancing as a WordPress developer because a lot of small businesses just wanted something that was reasonably priced and something that they can manage themselves and change the content. And WordPress was perfect for that. So then I started going down the WordPress path whilst I was doing free CodeCamp. And then after I did that for about another year and a half, I had a few clients whilst I was studying. I decided to apply for jobs. I think the catalyst for that was when my son started school. And I had a bit more free time. And I think when he started, I said, this is kind of a natural time for me to actually start looking for a new job. So that's when it, you know, that's kind of more or less how it happened for me.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I'm just wondering, did you enjoy having clients? Because I feel like some people, and this is actually kind of the group that I now fall into, early on, I really liked the idea of having different clients and, you know, all of that. But then as time went on, I was like, you know what? I don't know if I really want to do this. And I think I would just be a lot happier if I just had like one thing, like one job, one full-time job. Where do you kind of like fall in that spectrum?
Yeah, I completely agree. It can be a lot. I mean, it's you kind of end up being the support for that person. So they come to you for everything. And it depends on the clients that you have. So luckily, most of my clients are quite, you know, their website hardly ever changes or they're very independent so they can do the updates themselves. But I still have some of those clients today that I still manage the website, I still manage the hosting and all the security updates. So I think for me, I guess I never intended to stay freelancing for very long. So it was just a chance for me to sort of tick that commercial experience tick box when it comes to applying for jobs. And yeah, so I kind of picked up enough where I could manage it, but I can see how it can be quite overwhelming. And there's so many deadlines where you have to invoice them. And, you know, I know there's software that can help you with that, but you do have to keep on top of it. And, you know, not to mention tax returns and all the administration that comes with freelancing and managing your own business.
Yeah, you just took the words right out of my mouth. It is managing your own business, even if, and again, I know you're in the UK, in the US, there's like, you know, different things with taxes or whatever. But here in the US, even if you're still like a sole proprietor, like you don't have an LLC or a Inc. or whatever the different business structures are, you still have to think of things and run things like a business. You have to invoice people. You have to keep track of, you know, what you're earning, what you're spending. There are like legal agreements and things before you start working with a new client. There is so much that goes into it. And yeah, I found that, you know, working full time or now what I'm doing, like one thing, it's a lot less headspace. But obviously, everyone has their own preference to what they enjoy and all of that. But yeah, so it sounds like you now work in front-end development, right?
That's right, yeah. I'm in a full-time job in a small company. I guess it's quite bespoke in terms of what we do. So it's WebGIS. So I'm the front-end developer for all the WebGIS applications that we produce. So it's completely different. You know, when I applied for the role, I was thinking, I don't know anything about mapping. I don't know anything about, you know, longitude, latitude projections, etc. So it was a really steep learning curve for me. But I guess that's just web development as a whole. You know, it's you just have to jump in And you have to be really enthusiastic about learning new skills because it's forever changing. So it kind of, for me, it was hard, but you know, I enjoyed learning something new.
Awesome. Well, we have to take a quick break for our sponsor of this episode, but when we get back, we'll talk to you more about friend development and how you got your job today. Have you heard of cloud hosting, but you're not entirely sure what it is or if it's something you should be using? Let me bring you up to speed. Instead of hosting your website or app on just one machine, when you host in the cloud, your data is spread across lots of interconnected servers. This is great because if your website is hosted on just one machine, like it is with regular hosting, and that machine goes down, your site goes offline. But if your site is hosted in the cloud and one of the servers goes down, the others can pick up the slack and your site stays up. The servers can also adapt to accommodate any changes in traffic, so you don't have to worry about bandwidth limitations. And you only pay for the resources that you use. Linode was one of the first companies to offer cloud computing, 3 years before AWS arrived on the scene. And their cloud hosting packages start at just $5 a month. And as a Learn to Code with Me listener, you'll get $100 in credit. Build your next project in the cloud by going to linode.com/learn to code. Okay, great, we're back. So I was wondering, Phoebe, when you started applying to these new roles, did your background in education and history and administration, did that help you anyway? Like, were there any transferable skills that you were able to bring to these, whether it was an interview or even your job today?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, if you come from a different background, you know, don't forget that what you've done previously, you can take it over. I mean, in terms of things like communication skills, being able to kind of speak to different stakeholders, you know, because in the job that I was in, I would speak to lecturers, students, people from different departments, suppliers. And it really does make a difference because I think there is a stereotype that people who are from the tech industry or from the tech sector can't communicate very well. I mean, it's a terrible stereotype, but it does actually help. I mean, when I went for interviews, you know, I think it made a difference that I could have that kind of side of things in terms of communication and communicating technical terms in plain English. I think that's helped, for example. So when explaining things to clients and not using so much jargon, I think it's helped coming from the background that I've come from, for example.
Yeah. And when you were applying to these full-time roles, were you, like, how were you leveraging your past, like, full-time experience working in higher education with your freelancing experience? Did you kind of put both on the resume that you were sending in, or how did you position that?
Yeah, I definitely put down at the top. So I would start with my latest experience. I would use the freelancing and the rest of my professional experience. I still listed it, but it was less emphasis and I would put more description into the more technical things that I've done. So it's more applicable for the roles that I was applying for. But yeah, it's just about focusing your CV or your resume towards the job, and especially when it comes to the covering letter. And that's where you kind of want to explain how passionate you are about the job and what you do, what you want to do, and how you'd be good for that role.
And when you started applying to different roles, were you at that point just focusing on front end, or were you applying to other kinds of roles beyond that?
Yeah, I think for me, I was focusing on front end to begin with because it was what I was aiming for. The job that I was aiming to get was in front-end development, but I would have probably gone for a general web developer or any kind of junior role where they're willing to train up their candidate. So yeah, I was quite open in terms of the roles, but there were plenty of kind of front-end developer roles, to be honest. So I just focused on that first.
Yeah, and I have to ask this because this is a question that I also get asked a lot, and I know people are very curious about it. Okay, so the current role that you have, or your first one, that the first full-time role that you had after you started learning, if it wasn't the one you're at today, did you get that through like the traditional application process, or was there any element of knowing someone who worked there who got you a foot in the door?
No, I didn't know anyone from this particular company. I went through a traditional route. I joined a couple of recruitment agencies, but usually it was through applying for a job through like Indeed and Glassdoor. And it's usually advertised via an agency anyway. So I would end up signing up with these agencies and these recruitment agencies. And that's how I got the role that I got. And yeah, I kind of just did it through that way. I just took my CV and then they said, yeah, we want to interview you. So I was quite surprised because I think I had only applied for about 4 jobs and 2 of those had offered interviews. So I was like, I was quite lucky.
Yeah, that is like amazing odds. I was actually thinking to ask that next, like how many interviews or how many jobs you applied for to ultimately get that one, because I know for some people it can be quite a lot, but 4, yeah, that's really impressive.
Yeah, I was really surprised myself because I had read all the, you know, several threads on Twitter and articles about how hard it is when it comes to actually finding your first role in tech. So I was prepared. I mean, I had made spreadsheets and ready to track and hassle people whenever if they hadn't gotten back to me. But yeah, I think I just lucked out. I mean, you know, they said that they had been looking for the right person for several months and they haven't come across the right person. You know, I guess it's a combination of timing, luck. I mean, it just also depends. I mean, I know that some people apply for 100 roles before they even get their first job. But for me, I think it was probably, I'm not a conventional candidate. I've got experience in a whole other field, but I think for them, they like that. And they like the fact that I was freelancing as well. So it just depends, I guess. You know, it's a lot of the time it is just timing and tweaking your resume to make sure that it's grabbing the attention of the recruiter or the employer.
Yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned timing, you mentioned luck, which of course, you know, can factor into these things. But it also sounds like you put a lot of time and effort into crafting the cover letter and the resume. Like, would you personalize them for each job you applied for?
Yeah, I mean, it was usually quite generic with agencies. They would just ask for your CV and then they would phone you up and have a chat with you and then they kind of get to know you that way and then they would recommend roles. But yeah, I mean, I wrote a few covering letters when I was applying. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where I think I put a lot of work into the CV before I even started applying. I got my husband to review it. I got another friend to review it to, you know, to make sure there's no spelling errors, anything that I can improve on it. So it's just kind of like putting the work in initially, but I was ready to tweak it if I needed to, because I knew that one CV or one resume isn't going to meet the needs of everything. So it's just about adapting and be willing to sort of change it whenever you need to do it. So yeah, I mean, in my situation, because I kind of got my job immediately, it's quite hard to say, because I mean, like, you know, I know people will probably want to hear how can I get this job? But, you know, I got mine quite quickly. But I would say just making sure that you've got a good CV, making sure that it's no obvious things like spelling errors, make sure it's concise, try and fit it on one page. That makes a difference because a lot of recruiters don't have time. They prefer it if it's on one page if you can. Just small things like that, really. And just kind of being, I think I was interview ready as well. So I had been interviewing for my previous career. So I kind of got used to the process. And it's just, I guess it was just small things that probably contributed towards me getting my first job in tech. But, you know, it's just that, you know, I'm hoping that if people are listening that, you know, it is possible. And if you think that because you're too old or you're going into it and you've done something else for so many years, no one wants to employ you. I don't think that's necessarily true. And I think if you have enough motivation, enough will, you can get that first role. So I do think it's possible.
Yeah, for sure. And like being hardworking, being organized, all of that isn't, I know it comes easier to some people than others, but it's something you can control, right? And it sounds like going into it, you were organized because you mentioned you had spreadsheets already set up to track all the jobs you were going to be like applying or interviewing for, which I did the same thing, by the way. This was kind of a while ago at one point when I knew I wanted to like get a full-time job and stop freelancing. I put together like almost like a funnel or something, like how many I applied for, interview, like how I moved in the process so I could track everything. I ended up getting a job though in like 2 weeks or something. So I never needed all of it. But that organization, yeah, really says a lot to like how someone just approaches the process of applying to jobs and not just kind of sending out random, you know, resumes just to any job that comes online, but putting thought into it.
Yeah. And I think also what's really good is to get feedback. So I had a whole other tab for like questions asked in interviews and feedback, what I can improve. And, you know, I think sometimes it's quite hard to hear, you know, especially if you're quite sensitive, things that you can improve. You don't necessarily want to hear criticism, but it helps you become a better interviewee. So I think that's probably a good tip, is just make sure you get feedback from whatever job, if you can, if you don't, if you're not successful, because you need to learn what you did wrong and how you can get better. So I always give that as a tip to someone that's applying, just get feedback whenever you can.
Yeah, that is such a good point. And that just kind of reminded me of something back when I was working full time, and we would do lots of interviews, and, you know, we would obviously can't accept everyone, or you would interview people and you'd have to kind of reject some and, you know, hire one person. And I never had this happen to me, but there would be other like hiring managers who would have like a candidate who was rejected ultimately. Maybe they had an interview or a phone interview, whatever. And they would ask, I can't remember exactly how it would always be worded, but they would say something like, I just want like the feedback. Like, could you just tell me why I wasn't considered, or why I didn't move to the next round, or why I wasn't ultimately the one given an offer for this position? And it is like a really bold question to ask. And I think it's also kind of bold on the other end, getting that question and then navigating, how do I respond to this person? But I remember people I spoke to who had this kind of happen to them, they would say, well, if the person is serious and kind of like bold enough to ask it, I'm going to be honest and tell them exactly why, because obviously they really want to know, and hopefully they could take the feedback and use it to, you know, improve their whatever it may be to get the role that they are hoping to get. Yeah. I really like that tip. And I don't think I've ever had anyone mention that on the show before, but yeah, that's a good one, to collect that feedback from people. And the other thing I think about too, is every interview that you go on, even if you feel like you're so underqualified or you're really nervous and all of that, It's practice, right? So you're going to get better the more that you do. So even if it doesn't end up landing to an actual job and all of that, it's okay, because you're still crafting your interviewing skills.
Definitely. I would say it's a great tip, because just so when you're applying for something, don't necessarily apply for your dream job. You apply for any job that's within the field that you want, because you want to be able to practice. And any way to practice is go for those interviews, and any way you improve is by doing more interviews. And it's just something that, you know, unless you're very natural interviews, I'm not myself. I have to do the practice. I have to sit there and do mock interviews with whoever, unfortunately, is on the other end, usually my husband. But, and it's just kind of running through that process. And you find that the more you do it, you do actually get better at it. So it's one of those things where you have to practice. So yeah, definitely. I would say go through that process and come back. It's like a cyclical kind of process. You go for it, you get the feedback, you improve, and then, you know, it's kind of iterative, like with coding. So I would say, you know, use that same principle when you're applying for jobs. It is exactly the same principle. And eventually, through sheer numbers, hopefully you will get that job at the end of it.
Yeah. So you just talked about doing mock interviews and doing them with your husband. Was there anything else that you did to prepare for interviews specifically?
I mean, there's some really great resources online about how to prepare for a front-end developer kind of, or even, you know, whatever field you're looking at. So I was looking at front-end developer interview questions, and there's some generic questions and then there's some answers. I mean, of course, you know, you can't just say it word for word from someone else's answers, but it gives you an idea of what they expect you to know. And it's a great way to sort of, if you don't know it, go off and find out what the answer is, and then, you know, try and, you know, understand it, prepare for it, and then have it kind of in one of your kind of interview bank questions. But yeah, you don't know what they're going to ask you. You don't know how, you know, what kind of technical interview you are going to have. I mean, I was quite lucky. I didn't get whiteboarded, and I didn't have lots of technical questions that I had to answer, but I was ready for it. I had like a list of things, like, for example, in CSS, HTML, on JavaScript and now have things on, like, you know, for example, closures and JavaScript, understanding that and OOP. So I prepared kind of like questions and answers just generally for any kind of web development within web development and the subjects within web development. And also accessibility, that's one that you shouldn't forget as well. And I would have like spreadsheets with different tabs, and I have like the various topics that possibly they could ask. But it's just kind of, I treated it like revising for an exam. And I knew how to do that. So I used the same principle when it came to preparing for a job interview and the possibilities of what they could ask me. But I would say also, don't get too bogged down with all the technical subjects. You know, don't forget that one of the questions that I probably ask you is, tell me about yourself. What experience do you have apart from this job you're applying for? You know, because you know, you don't forget about all the general questions, not just the technical, but also about yourself. So when you're preparing, interviewers usually want to know what you're like as a person, not just your technical knowledge.
Yeah, I'm sort of chuckling because I'm thinking, like, if you're in an interview and the interviewer asks you, why do you want this job? And you just draw a blank, you're like this. Even if you did amazing on the technical portion, if you can't like give a decent answer to why you want to work there or why you're interested in the company or anything like that, that could be a bigger red flag, I think, depending on the interviewer than not doing great on the technical stuff, you know?
Yeah. I would say, yeah, definitely. Like, do your research on the company, because they might ask, do you know anything about this company? It's like, no, but I know everything about JavaScript. It's like, you have to be well-rounded when you do prepare for any kind of interview. It's not just, you know, don't just focus on coding and technical sides. Just try and do everything and you know, you don't have all the time in the world. You just have to do as best you can as well. So, and the more knowledge you gain, the more it compounds, and you'll find that it will get easier. But the first interview is hardest, and you feel like, oh, I've done so badly. But you've probably learned a lot from that. So it is a process, and it's quite scary. So don't beat yourself up if you find it really hard to get going. Because for me, it took me a long time to actually start to apply for a job, because I was very scared. But once you get going, you realize at the end of the day, it's just people at the other end, and they just kind of want to get to know you and you have to show why you would be good at that job and why you want it. So hopefully if you're passionate, it will shine through.
Yeah. Great advice. So I'm switching gears a bit because I really wanted to talk about this. We don't have so much time left, but nowadays, so I'm like fast forwarding a lot because you obviously got, you know, a role in front-end development. Fast forwarding a bit, you do a lot of writing. You also do mentorship for people learning how to code right now. And I wanted to know how you started doing that.
Yeah, so I started blogging and writing more because I wanted to talk about parenting and learning how to code. And those were the sort of subject that I was interested in. And I wanted to kind of just see if I can help a few other people through that process. For me, that was my goal, just to help other people, because it was quite lonely learning from home with kids just at home, and not, you know, my husband worked away a lot. So for me, just to have that kind of putting myself out there, you know, even though I'm quite introverted, so it was actually quite strange to do it, but I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I may as well just go the full hog. So I decided just to write about myself. And then later on, I started writing more technical guides and things that I've learned, and I thought that were really hard. And I thought, well, if I find it hard, someone else is going to find it difficult as well. So I started writing more technical sort of beginner how-to guides. And it's just kind of gone from there, really. I haven't written anything recently, but it's just been so busy with the pandemic and having to homeschool. But then in terms of the mentoring, I was approached by Andrew Hedges from the Colab Lab. And he runs a nonprofit, and they mentor early career developers. They teach them collaboration skills, pair programming, how to basically, it's a project from start to finish, 8 weeks. You build a shopping app, and it kind of teaches you the softer skills of programming, because everyone that starts in the program has to have a certain level of skills. So you need to know React and HTML, CSS, and the basics before you even get onto the program. It's just to teach you how to collaborate and how to do code review. So it's really fantastic because it's not necessarily the skills that you learn through platforms like FreeCodeCamp, Code Academy, because you learn things about how to use Git, GitHub, and how to do code reviews. And it's just a great way to kind of get a taste of what it's like to work on a software team. And yeah, it's fantastic. It's an 8-week program, you know, and you get a mentor. It's more or less one-to-one with a mentor. And yeah, it was very rewarding. I love doing it. And that was, I did my first cohort just before Christmas last year.
Nice. And I know the last year has been crazy with COVID. And as you said just before, homeschooling your kids, which I hadn't even, we hadn't even touched upon, but obviously that was a thing. I mean, for parents, I think with school-aged children in a lot of countries, they could, relate to that. And even before the pandemic, everything shifted so much though, I was wondering, like, how do you decide how to allocate your time? Because you have family, you have work, and then you have this like other kind of area of helping others through like your writing or mentoring or something like that, which is, I'm going to assume, like all unpaid, right? So it's kind of like volunteer work in a sense.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's all volunteer based.
Yeah. And then not to mention, of course, other aspects of your life outside of those things, family, work, and then helping others in those ways. How do you kind of figure out like what time you're going to put where and that you have enough bandwidth to do it?
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough. I think with the mentoring, it had to be pushed back because I was approached before the pandemic really took off. So I was approached early last year. So in 2020. But then I had to delay it to September. And yeah, I mean, first of all, I have to prioritize my children, my family. Next thing's the job. And then any kind of volunteering activities I'm doing, so like writing or the mentoring. And yeah, it has been tough. I managed to fit in the mentoring when my kids finally went back to school in September. And then it was really lucky. I managed to get through that cohort. And then by January the following year, we were in another lockdown. So I had to homeschool for about 3 months. But when I'm homeschooling, I'm pretty much focusing on work and homeschooling. So I can't take on any extra activities, which is why, I mean, things do fall to the wayside, but you know, that's life, isn't it? So I haven't been able to write. I've promised Quincy from FreeCodeCamp that I would write an article on design patterns, but I haven't been able to do it. But it's in the bag somewhere. Hopefully sometime this year I'll get it written. But yeah, it's just, you just have to do what you can. But at the end of the day, we're human. It's only so many hours we can fit in a day. And my basic principle is to prioritize my family first.
Awesome. Well, we're running out of time and we have to wrap up soon. There's one final question I wanted to ask though, which I think is a great piggyback off the last thing you said. And it's just any kind of advice that you have specifically for parents that are teaching themselves how to code and they don't have like a CS degree or anything like that. So they're teaching themselves.
I would say one big advice is don't compare yourself to others. You're going to see, once you join the world of Twitter and you start researching into people who transition to the tech industry, it's like, oh, I did it in 6 months, I did it in 3 months, you know, I got this wonderful job at Google. Don't compare yourself, you know, take your time. If it's something that you do want to pursue, it will happen. You have to maintain the pace which is most suitable to your own circumstances. So for me, you know, some days I would only learn for 15 minutes and that was great. I learned, as long as you know more than you did yesterday and you have that kind of consistency and that in mind, then that's all that matters. So go at your own pace, find something that suits you. So for me, I use FreeCodeCamp. I didn't go to a boot camp or anything like that, but maybe a boot camp would be better structured for you. So you have to find whatever suits your learning style and don't compare yourself to others. So I think that's probably the biggest tips I've got if you're starting out, and make sure it fits around your children and your life circumstances.
I love that. I think that's amazing advice for everyone to remember. Don't compare yourself to others. Super helpful. And thank you again so much, Phoebe, for coming and talking with me today. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter, so you can find me on there. I'm my handle is @PhoebeVF, and I'm sure we can put a link somewhere because it's not the most easiest handle to remember. And yeah, so you can contact me through there. You can also send me DMs if you're not too comfortable just kind of tweeting out in public.
Awesome. Yes, we'll definitely include a link to that and anything else that was mentioned in the show notes page. Thank you again for coming on.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening today. If you missed anything or would like a recap, you can find the show notes at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper navigation and search for the guest's name. If you enjoyed this episode and are interested in learning how to code, there's no better time to start than right now. To help you out, we have a free downloadable resource with our 10 learning strategies for new coders. It's perfect for beginners, no matter your experience or background, and you can download your free copy at learntocodewith.me. It was great to have you with me on the Learn to Code With Me podcast today. I'll see you next time.